We had such a great time as a team with that 33-man squad. We just finished second in the world and we had one bad performance. But I wasn't picked, so you are disappointed. But at the same time, you understand that it's you have no right to be there. You know, at the time I accepted it, I thought I'd never play again for England. You're listening to the England Rugby Podcast, O2 Inside Line. I'm Dan Cole. I'm Dan Cole and I play for Leicester Tigers and England Rugby. The position I play is tight head prop. They're in the front row of the scrum, play on the right hand side, and it's called tight head because we push against the loose head and the hooker. So our head is tight against two other players. And it's the most challenging position in all of sports. The characteristics that make a good tight head prop, I think you have to be mentally resilient because you do a lot of your work is at the scrum and it's a tough place to be and you're under pressure. And if you get one wrong or get penalised, then there's always going to be another one coming up, which you have to get right. Probably a position that requires more of your to switch your mind off and physically run rather than think. But yeah, it's a great position to play. I'm 6'6" in real life, but I've just been squashed down to 6'2". Growing up, I think my parents would describe me as a lovely child. No, I don't think they would. At school, I was really good, but I think at home, I was a bit of a terror. And me and my dad turns out quite similar, and I think we used to clash quite a lot, which is interesting because I have two sons of my own, and I think they're quite like me, and they like to have the final say. So it's kind of like I'm replaying winding my father up is what they do to me. So this is like, it's just the chain of genetics, obviously. Wasn't overly sporty. I played football and played sports we kind of did in PE at school, enjoyed them, but I was never a natural athlete. Like, you know, some guys are great with a bat and ball or whatever. No, I was just a lump, which is how I got into rugby. I grew up in a small village in Leicestershire, a place called Newton Harcourt. My parents still live there in the same house. I lived at home with my dad, David, my mum, Stella, and my sister, Hannah, who's 2 years older than me. Yeah, we actually clashed when we grew up. She was always bigger and stronger and better. We all grew up in the same place. We're a bit sort of, we're not isolated, but dad used to work as a civil engineer. Mum used to work as well. She's a lab technician at a local school, so they weren't overly sporty. I think my mother's grandfather played rugby league and my dad's father's into cricket. He's into motorsport, so rugby and that kind of stuff never really crossed my mind until I was sort of older and at school. It was a normal, fairly middle-class childhood, high risk. Cars doing more than 30 miles an hour through the village. You had to watch out all the time. And that's about as dangerous as it got. Couldn't get in the football team. So they said, there's a rugby team. I played, enjoyed it. And then a couple of guys there played at South Leicester Rugby Club, which was turned out to be my local rugby team. And I went down there and picked up the game and started playing under 13s and loved it. I think rugby training and training every other day and that kind of stuff gave me something to channel my energy and channel my temper into. Yeah, I think I became a more rounded individual on the back of it. When I think about my career, if I'd been born probably somewhere else and hadn't gone to the state schools in Leicestershire that played rugby, I'd never played the game. And also having like Leicester Tigers, the training grounds, 5 minutes from my house, or 5 minutes from my parents' house, 10 minutes from my parents' house. So even there, I think the opportunity to play in the academy came because I was local and could train. If I'd been further away, I don't think I'd have been given. I was basically sort of a front rower, and they sort of said, come along, because we need front rowers just to fill the team. I always wanted to be a Formula One driver. I mean, I'm probably a bit heavy now for that. Probably wouldn't fit in it. Well, I wouldn't fit in it. But like, yeah, I used to love Nigel Mansell, Damon Hill, all that Williams Formula One growing up. I was bullied into Sporting Arsenal Football Club by my uncle, who, he did the stuff like he'd have a blue straw as a favourite colour and he'd change it for a red straw and all that kind of stuff. So gradually he got corrupted into following Arsenal, even though I'm not from London, I'm from Leicester. So rugby wasn't a massive fixture in my life. I remember listening on the radio, obviously England Test matches. You'd pick it up when it was on the TV and Six Nations and stuff, but I didn't follow the rules, I didn't really know anything about it, but you'd watch it because England were playing. And obviously the Tigers were a very successful team. When I was sort of 10, I think they reached the European Cup versus Brive. It was always in the background, rugby. I think especially with the way Leicester, the county, the city is. Originally, I just played rugby for fun, obviously for school and club. And we used to train, I think, Tuesday, Thursday nights. Play on Sundays, and it wasn't until I'd been playing for a couple of years, I sort of played for Leicester County, I think. Well, I did play for Leicester County, but like under 15s level, and that sort of turned from rugby from a Tuesday, Thursday night to like a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. And then you play on Sunday for your club, you play at school on Wednesdays, and every day pretty much ended up playing rugby, which was great because I enjoyed it and still do. But yeah, I think probably the first time it became serious was when I went to sixth form. I changed schools. I went to a school in Leicester City, which is Wigston Queen Elizabeth College. And basically I went there so I could get timetable to go to Tigers Academy as a, I wasn't contracted, but just as a player to go there. I probably should have done better at school, but rugby took over and it's worked out all right. And then it was only probably when I got contracted to Leicester after school, when I was thinking about sort of what do I do in my life, go to university, apply to university, and Leicester said, no, have a year here. And I did, and I haven't looked back really.
I'm Tom Collett, and I suppose I'm Coley's only friend, outside of rugby, he would say. We met in the Tigers Academy almost 20 years ago, I think, and then built a bond playing together, and then we've been friends ever since. He's just been relentless. He's never moaned about not being picked. He's never moaned about what happened in Japan. He's just got on with his job. He's just, you know, gone to work. He's tried to get better every day. What he was able to do in France in 2023, to watch him kind of do what he did in the semi-final and stuff, was just a very proud moment for everyone that knows him, really. I don't think he played the game to get 100 caps. I don't think 100 caps means everything to him, but I think there was that little bit of, you know, you get to triple figures, then it kind of stands out as something that's really quite remarkable. It's amazing to see your best friend play running out for England. Like, that's something that, you know, not many people can say they do. But actually, to me, it's just, he's Dan Cole. He's the dad to Henry and Ralph. And I see him more like that now than the rugby player. He's an awesome dad to his boys. And he, you know, he's a, although Bell might disagree sometimes, he's a great husband and he loves his family. And that's probably what makes me most proud about him.
England rugby. I played age groups. I think I played under 18s the final year. I played England North under 16s. Wasn't good enough to be selected for top grade. And then similar with 18s, I didn't miss the first year. I played the second year, I think an AAR tournament in Lille, I think it was. Well, I got capped in 2010 when I was 22, just turned 23. And I literally think every tired in England was injured at the time. As I'd got my opportunity at Leicester through Julian White and Martin Castriviani being injured, I basically was able to take advantage of the opportunity. And similar with England, I remember they hadn't really been linked, but at the time I think there was sort of Duncan Bell, Julian White, Phil Vickery were all injured or coming to the sort of end of their careers. And I remember the coaching staff at the time, Graham Rowntree, was the forwards coach, always the scrum coach of England, and I had a very good relationship from him because he used to coach me in the academy at Leicester, and I'd grown up watching him and sort of said, are you going to be in the squad? I played in 2010 Six Nations. My first game, I came off the bench against Wales in the centenary game, so I've got a very special shirt at home. I can't really remember much about the game. I was just being excited, nervous. I think we warmed up in the second half and I was told, right, you're on, which was probably the best thing to happen because I didn't have to think about it, you know, not like you're on in 5-10 minutes. It was literally, right, you're going on, get on and run around. And since then, I've kind of stuck around.
Here's Youngs working so close to the line. Dan Cole can see that line and cross it.
McIntyre, full tilt, bang, what a shot from Dan Cole.
I'm George Ford, play for Sale Sharks and England. Dan Cole on the pitch, the most consistent player I've played with in my career. Tough, one of the best set-piece scrummagers in the world. You know he'll turn up for you every week. Off the field, he's such a great lad, very, very funny, yeah, but a very loyal person.
I'm Ben Earl, I play for Saracens and England. Coley's a bit more of an experienced campaigner, but someone I've grown very close to in terms of he's a mad football fan, so we talk a lot about the state of the football world. He's a good guy, he's a bit more of like a father figure in the squad and everyone looks to him for a bit of measured advice now and again.
Dan Cole, still Cole, right. He's there! Dan Cole, can he believe it? It's his second try for England.
There are obviously plenty of ups and downs with an international career. It's obviously a massive privilege to play for England. and it's something you should never take for granted. And so when you first start playing, I think you're new and the shiny new thing, you're exciting. And I think as you further get into your career, I think you realise playing for England, the attention, especially with the media and the fan base that you get. And when you're winning, it's brilliant. But when you lose games or play poorly, it can be quite a not tough place because you're trying to ignore what the media say, but you get distracted basically. I think the most important thing as a player, you listen to your teammates and your coaches and the people around you. But obviously with England, there's a massive attention and sometimes it can become a distraction. I think as a player, you have to balance that out. I mean, if you listen to the right people, it's tough. I've had some very low points in my career. There was a major tournament in England in 2015 that we didn't do too well in. It's supposed to be one of the biggest achievements in your life. And then to perform the way we did, it's incredibly tough. Not only you're letting yourselves down, but you've let, in some regards, a nation and a rugby public down. But I think sometimes some of my toughest times in England shirts have probably been, what do they say, it's darkest before the dawn. And I think after that, I remember Steve and Eddie came in, they rang me up, had a voicemail. I thought that was my England career done after 2015. I thought, rubbish, as the results showed. And so I remember getting a voicemail. Eddie Jones rang me, basically saying, you're going to play in the Six Nations. You need to lose some weight, get better, but you're going to be playing. And from then, came into the environment. And yeah, we're just energised and totally different. I think we won that Grand Slam. It's the only Grand Slam in my career. Won that 2016 Grand Slam. It was a massive turnaround. So you have those massive highs and massive lows. We obviously played in the final in 2019. Didn't go too well. We lost. Wasn't selected for 3 years. And when Steve came back in, I was sort of picked in the 23 Six Nations. And then obviously played in France in 2023. And that was one of the highlights of my career, playing that. We lost in the semi, but from where we were to where you finish, it's that sort of high of, and that came off of a period of 3 years not playing. And you know, so it's the lows and the highs, and I think it's that part about being resilient and keep going. And the low points, I think, make you appreciate the highs, because I think England winning test matches are tough. No matter what game you win, there's a lot of effort from a lot of people have gone in, and fans sometimes see 80 minutes the performance, whereas you know, the players, the coaches have been doing for 6 months leading up to that performance, the players have been in camp, all that kind of stuff, away from your families, which again is what we choose to do. You know, everything's a choice. I choose to be away from my family to do this, but it can be tough. Managing lows or losses, you have to think, switch your sort of emotional side off in some regards. You give yourself 24 hours to be sad after a game, because obviously it's hurt you physically, normally put some effort in, and you know, every week you spend the whole week prepping to, we're going to win the game. You have a certain belief that you are, and when you get out there and lose, it's, you know, your belief gets broken for a while, so you have to sort of rebuild that, and you try and look at the game, review a game honestly. I think you look at yourself, say, did I try my best, you know, what did I do, where can I be better, that kind of stuff, and then you build it in the team and you learn. You always get better. I think one of the great things here in our coaching staff at the minute, Steve Borthwick, doesn't really ever talk about wins or losses. He talks about getting better. And I've known Steve, been coached by Steve for a fairly long time now, and that's, you know, true. And I think as a player, you're obviously disappointed, but when you have a coach that goes, today we're just going to get better, and like, my job is to coach you to be better, and if you can't do something, then it's on me, I'll teach you how to do it. And sometimes I think, yeah, losing can bring a team further together, because you lose, it's a bit of adversity you have to overcome, and once you overcome that adversity, you become stronger as a team and as a player. One thing I've learned, especially having children, you have a bad day at work, a tough day, you lose a game, you go home. Thankfully, your children don't care. Really, if I have a bad day at work, I might have been stuffed in the scrum, whatever, but I go home, I might be grumpy, but they're just happy to see dad. So you're kind of like, right, I'll park that and I'll be dad, and you'll be present for them and happy, because it's not their fault that you're rubbish at your job. And similarly on the rugby field, like the ability to park an emotion, park something that's happened. We always talk about next job mentality. Is those kind of abilities to something good or bad goes wrong on the field or happens to you, it's the ability to move on to the next thing. You kind of try and compartmentalise, is that the word, everything. Trying to get better and improve, say as a dad, as a father, as a husband, you're constantly trying to improve, and you know, a lot of what you learn, I think rugby and coach from mentors, it has an effect. I wouldn't say I have a mentor or someone to guide me, but I think there's a lot of everything I do obviously involves my wife, because she's the one that gets left in the lurch room away. The ability to communicate with her and just have a sounding board and someone to tell you when you're being wind your neck in and that kind of stuff is massive. And I think, you know, I've always had great supportive parents support me throughout my career, and they're trying to let me, you know, they've never been overbearing because they've known nothing about rugby, but they sort of, they'll listen and sort of offer advice. So yeah, I've got a very good support network. ultimately, at the end of the day, rugby is a game. It's our lives and stuff. Especially as I've got older, I've tried to sort of separate it. And, you know, I will say I've been grateful for the people I've got around me to be able to support and listen to what I have to say and give good advice. I've got some great teammates as well, you know, here, and Joe Marler and people like that, and George Ford, who in some regards you've grown up with, that are in a similar position, and you have people around you that you can bounce stuff off in camp with and talk. And I think that's probably one of the big shifts as I've got older, is just there's been a real focus probably in society in general about being able to talk. When you think about the people that have helped you and the people you lean on, there's a lot of them.
I'm Isabel and I am Dan Cole's wife. The first time I met Dan, Tom Youngs brought Dan to Norfolk for a barbecue. And he obviously caught my eye. He had long, dashing hair at that point. He looked kind of like a bigger surfer dude, which in Norfolk was kind of appealing. And we just remained friends for years after. And eventually he just asked me out on a date. He's a brilliant dad. I miss him so much when he's not here. He's always worked hard at it and always tries to get better. I think he's never had anything given to him on a plate, so he has worked for everything. The Joe-mance. So Joe and Dan, two completely different characters. For some reason, the chalk and cheese of them has just absolutely worked. They have got each other through some hard times and emotional times. Their friendship is super special. It really is super special. And they've needed each other a lot. We are so proud as a family of Dan. It's so wonderful to go and watch him, to celebrate. Nothing makes you prouder than standing on the side and watching all of them coming together as one. There's some of the most special moments and special days we've ever got to witness, and we get to witness that, and it's brilliant.
First time I met Joe Marler was in camp. I think he got called into, might have been 2010, 2011, that kind of time. He got called into one of the England camps, and he had bright red hair. He had stars cut into his hairstyle, but he actually turned up and he was very quiet and didn't really say anything. It was only, I think, we went towards Africa in 2012. We actually got to know each other, and I think he made his test debut and we played together. And when you train together and you're put through tough times and tough training sessions or tough matches, you learn a lot about each other and you learn about who you can and cannot trust. And not so much trust, but who's putting it in. And I think in rugby teams, there's no hiding place. We are probably very different in personalities. He's can be loud and outgoing and I'm sort of quiet. But I think in terms of the values that we have, they're shared. It's a friendship, a very good friendship. One would try, yeah, very much treasure. Would I think he thinks the same way about me? Probably not, knowing Joe. But hopefully. Well, he would say I'm boring, so that's probably why. So after the major tournament in Japan in 2019, I didn't play, or I was dropped from the squad, which was at the time was tough because you were, I mean, again, you never expect to play for England. You never, so it's always a privilege, but I think we had such a great time as a team with that 33-man squad. We felt really sort of connected to everyone. And I mean, we just finished second in the world and we had one bad performance and we'd been really good. And so you wanted the sort of the good times to continue and keep being part of that team because it was a fantastic team, which obviously I think went on to win the Six Nations. But I wasn't picked. So you are disappointed. But at the same time, you understand that it's, you have no right to be there. And it's the coach's choice. And you know, at the time I accepted it, I thought I'd never play again for England. So I went back to my club and got on with business. I think, thankfully, I was very fortunate that around that time, Steve Borthwick and Allard Walters both agreed to come to Leicester. I remember the first thing Allard said to me was, so is this it? Are you parking the bus? Are you done now? And I was like, no. And in the back of your mind, I think you want to, I mean, I'll probably, when I'm 75 years old, I'll probably think I can still play for England in some regards and want to play for England. So there's probably in the back of your mind, there's always a prove people wrong. I don't know, but you just want to keep going and be the best you can because, you want to be, even if they don't pick you, you want to make them not pick you rather than just not being good enough. Steve left to come to England in 2022 and he sort of said to me, I'd like you to be in the Six Nations squad. So I said, absolutely, hands down, if you want me in there, I'll definitely give it my all. And I was fortunate enough to play and I was able to get selected to go to France in the summer. International rugby is quite tough in the fact that it's, I wouldn't say a conveyor belt, but you play the Six Nations, then you're home for a couple of months, then there's a summer tour, and you come for a couple of months, and it's the Autumn Internationals, and you're home for a couple of months, and it's like Christmas, and then it rolls around. And I never think you take it for granted, but it's constantly coming thick and fast at you. And so when you come off that sort of conveyor belt, everything stops, and you're like, oh, and you miss it, and you miss the people around it, and you sort of have to work hard to get back into it. And I say it was, I was fortunate enough to be, I say, selected by again by Steve for 3 years, and I say the mentality, you know, he asked me to help the team. I think being older, and I have my limitations, but I was just, you probably have a more open mind in the fact that whereas once upon a time you played and you were focused on starting or being on the bench or being involved, whereas now it's more about how can we help the squad, what can we do, how we help people, make England the best, and the scramble or set piece, whatever it is, helping England be the best it can be rather than as an individual. And that's the environment's become a lot less probably individualised, especially over the past few years, but you know, it's much more a team collective, and if the team does well, we all do well, rather than, you know, a sort of just trying to push for a starting spot to be individual pride. I'm at an age, now I'm 36, that I understand that every camp could be my last camp or game, whether it's selected or injury or anything like that. So there's definitely there's an end to my career coming. I'm trying to delay it as long as possible. It's about helping the squad in England winning in whichever way that can be, whether it's, say, on the field and trying to, I don't know, always finish last in fitness, but bringing up the tail in fitness and pushing people in that regard, or mentally helping people off the field with scrum-wise techniques, all that kind of stuff. You want to help as much as you can and facilitate and just make England win. Because, as I say, I've been in teams, I prefer to be not involved in England win than playing in England lose. And that's the thing, as you get older, you understand that more. And so I love being in the environment. It's a great place to be, and you just want to help it improve and get better. So I've played 320 times for Leicester. We played in the semi-final in 2023. Been on a couple of Lions tours, won a Grand Slam, won a couple more championships, won 4 premierships. It's been all right. Don't want to sound arrogant, but I've enjoyed my career and I've been fortunate. It's about being the teams you're in, and I've been blessed to have played in brilliant teams with brilliant players.